Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Cullman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Cullman attorney Melvin Haystack. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And no lawyer on this show actually helped write that disclaimer. And now, here's your host for Understanding the Law.
Welcome back. This is Danielle from Understanding the Law. In studio tonight, I have the amazing Tommy Drake. How are you, Tommy?
Good. Good to be here.
Good to have you here. So what you been doing?
Oh, just staying busy. I mean, in court essentially every day. When not in court, I find myself working on appeals, extraordinary writs. And then when I have a little extra time, working on the farm a little bit.
Now, Melvin, one of his boys, want to say happy birthday to Melvin's boy. I don't know which one it was. Judy did not tell me which one's birthday was today, so I don't know. But happy birthday, sweetheart. We hope your evening goes well. And Melvin will be back with us. He's been in federal court, and will be in federal court for a little while, as I understand.
So, oh, yeah.
Spoke with Josh O'Neill a little earlier, and he slammed out Champ Crocker, apparently the same as you and all the other attorneys in Cullman. You guys have been in court.
Oh, yeah.
Court never stops.
Unfortunately, yeah. I'm ready for a long holiday. Thank goodness when Christmas gets here, and hopefully have a few days off. I think actually there is going to be a long Christmas holiday this year, so that'll be good.
It will be. So yeah. Tell me what you've been doing in court a little bit.
Well, of course, the big thing, is the federal suit. I'm sure Melvin talked about it. We're the U.S. District Court, Northern Division, Alabama. Judge Locke had issued a preliminary injunction. Of course, that was in all the newspapers. That what was not mentioned, however, and should be mentioned, is the fact that that case originated with Melvin Haystack filing a petition writ of habeas corpus in federal court, which then thereafter I entered into, and then the SPLC, of course, the Southern Poverty Law Center, entered, and then we had the ACLU out of New York City that entered, among others, and then it essentially the case blew up from there. Of course, that's the case dealing with a cash only bail issue in Cullman County, the issue of indefinite detention of indigents where they do not have the financial means to make excessive bail, Eighth Amendment issue, equal protection of indigents issue, 14th Amendment issues, which, thank goodness, we had a favorable ruling. Now, what does that mean? Well, essentially what it means is that henceforth, anyone that is determined to be indigent, they will be entitled to an unsecured bond. Now, there's a safety valve there for law enforcement. If a person is deemed to be a flight risk, or a person is deemed to be a danger to the community, then a law enforcement agent can simply fill out a form. That form is transmitted to the clerk of court. The clerk of court then transmits that to the judge, either circuit or district judge. And then within 48 hours, the district or circuit judge, as the case may be, then will convene a hearing. And then at that time, the state can present evidence to prove by a preponderance of the evidence, which is a balancing factor, Actually, I think it's clear and concise evidence. But anyway, not much more. But essentially, where the state's given an opportunity to prove that a person may, based on their recidivism, based upon their history, may be a danger to a community or a flight risk. Example of that would be a person that comes into Cullman County dealing drugs, trafficking case. They're from Atlanta, Georgia. They have no family here, and the state alleges that they may be a flight risk, specifically that they have no connections here and they may flee back to the state of Georgia. Now, the judge convenes a hearing within 48 hours where the state can prove their case on the issue of bail, and also the defendant, who would be provided counsel by that time, would also be able to rebut that information. So it's a lot cleaner. It's a more concise, very defined, but more just system that has been set up by this preliminary injunction. So it's going to be good for both sides. Another aspect that I think is a positive in the case, it in effect requires a judge instead of a magistrate to make these decisions. Now, a magistrate could be anybody.
Yes.
That could be someone that has little or no education, has no legal background whatsoever, and there's a rule that the Supreme Court Committee on Rules passed about 7 years ago saying that magistrates could set bail in felony cases. So, of course, there's a conflict of law there because you have the legislature that says a magistrate can only set bail in a misdemeanor case. However, the Supreme Court Committee on Rules says, well, henceforth, a magistrate can set bail in a felony case. So we have a conflict of law issue there. And that's an issue that I suspect will be taken up at some point, probably in Montgomery County. It's a case that I'll probably bring, but with some client, depending on, what test pilot that I can run into. But anyway, so the good thing is it works for everybody now. You don't have long detention cycles of months and in some cases years where people are being confined simply because they don't have the financial means to bail. And conversely, you have a situation to where you're not having to wait months to have a bail hearing. So as the rule says, 48 hours, so it's quick. And the way the law works on that, you don't have to have a full-blown due process hearing. You have a hearing that comports with minimum standards of due process. Essentially, both sides are given an opportunity to present evidence to present their case, and then a judge can make a decision on the same day as far as bail. So that's sort of the big thing that has come out in recent memory.
Y'all have in federal court in Cullman.
What's that now?
You have in federal court in Cullman.
Well, the federal court is, of course, in Jefferson County.
That's what I wanted to clarify.
Yeah. Well, I probably said Cullman County did.
You did.
But the judges, of course, are in Cullman. You know,
right.
You've got your inferior superior court judges that have to make these rulings. But, of course, yes, the federal judges, Judge Locke is at the Hugo Black Building there on Fifth Avenue in Birmingham.
So you are in Jefferson County.
Yeah, Jefferson County. Of course, the federal courts have sessions in, believe it or not, Decatur, Huntsville, Jasper, Anniston, Florence. So you could draw a case, meaning that federal judges are circuit riders. They ride the circuits. You may have a preliminary examination or initial hearing with a federal judge or an arraignment in Birmingham, and then you find yourself in Decatur trying the case. But it's an interesting thing. It's humorous now, but it was not humorous at the time, where I would have an initial appearance in one court, maybe at Hugo Black in Birmingham. I'd show up for trial at Hugo Black at 15 minutes before 9 and find out I was supposed to have been in Anniston at 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't make the judge too happy.
Yeah, Melvin's talked about that before. It's kind of, you can't be in two places at one time. So
yeah.
Then you have to kind of, you have court in four counties. You can't be in court at the same time in four counties. So
right.
You have to adjust it and call ahead. And
well, these kinds of problems, though, sometimes happen because a secretary just believes that you're supposed to be in Birmingham because of the initial appearance when you're actually supposed to be in Anniston.
Right.
So it's very embarrassing. But I spoke to other attorneys. It happens quite frequently, and I've heard federal judges say that. You know, but right now that's sort of the big thing in the news, and that is big news. I think what you're going to see eventually is a federal district judge enter a blanket order that applies to the entire state.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be. At this point you see piecemeal litigation in South Alabama with city or municipal courts. Then you'll have some litigation like in Cullman County where a given petitioner complains of a bail system. But essentially, under Alabama state law, cash-only bail is still allowable, and it's still implemented, and it's still abused because cash-only bail is not bail. It's sham bail. Most people cannot make cash-only bail. I know I couldn't. So I think what you'll see eventually is a petition, probably again by the SPLC or the ACLU, bringing in these various defendants from various different 67 counties, petitioning the U.S. District Court, and then from there essentially adopting the framework that was implemented in the Cullman County case. So it's big from that standpoint. And it's going to, unfortunately, while it is a good thing, it's a positive thing, the judges are going to have to work harder because instead of having, under Alabama law, a hearing every 90 days to address overcrowding in jails, to address people that have not bailed out from the last 90 mm-hmm. days, then now it's going to be essentially a 48-hour period from arrest. You have these dockets that are essentially set the year before. So you may set a court schedule in November for the next year.
Right.
And so you've got divorce cases, one week, criminal court the next, then civil cases, then civil jury trials, and so on and so forth. But when you have that type of framework and organization, it essentially throws a fly in the ointment when you hear that you have five hearings on bail issues on Monday. Or think about this, let's say that you have a bail issue that arises on a Thursday. And you can't reach it on Friday. That means on Sunday you've got to have a hearing. So judges are going to have to work harder. And of course, that's just one of the byproducts of this new law.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is Danielle with Tommy Drake on Understanding the Law. If you have any law question, you may call in. Our call in line is 256-737-9505. We are still going to stay with it. I don't think we're going to go to commercial. We're going to go right on through. So.
You're the boss. You want to go to commercial? We can go to commercial.
No, let's give it about five more minutes.
Okay.
I have a question I want to ask Tommy. I just wanted to make everyone aware that the call-in line is 256-737-9505, and you can call in with any law question. Tommy will answer it to the best of his ability. All right, Tommy, I want to touch something that I got asked, and the only person I know to ask is you or Melvin, so I'm going to ask.
Shoot.
So if a young lady is expecting, and she is expecting by a young man that doesn't want to be part of her life, and she's with another young man, when she goes to have that child, does she have authority to put the new young man's name on the birth certificate that is in her life?
Well, that's a good question. It's an excellent question, and it happens all the time. And there's not really enough law on the point to say you can or you can, other than to say you can, okay? Technically, these documents that you sign are under oath.
Mm-hmm.
So my caveat to anyone that's going to be signing any of these census documents, and they are actually census, they're birth
that's
certificates,
true.
But they're... But they are sworn to. What we commonly find is people saying, well, I don't know who the father is. They leave it blank for reasons. They don't want that person involved in the child's life. They'll sign, um, you know, in some cases, like we were talking about, that someone else is the father that is not the father. And this just runs into more problems. By hindsight, I think that almost and virtually 100% of the people that do that find later it's more trouble than it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, human beings have their problems. And so, you know, the other thing is if you're wanting child support from the actual natural father, then you change your mind. You want the child support because you need child support. Most people do, especially as a child gets older, the needs increase. Then you're going to have to go back and pay an attorney to do a paternity test, which is expensive. Mm-hmm. Obviously, paying an attorney is expensive, and then you have your court cost, and then the delays and the time off from work because, again, you have the court schedule to deal with also, which could take months. So it's certainly not recommended. From a standpoint of has anyone ever been charged with perjury by virtue of the fact that they put someone else's name on there or claim that someone else is the father? To my knowledge, in 30 years of practicing law, I've never heard of it, never seen it. I mean, and so there's really no bar from a practical standpoint from someone doing that. I don't recommend it because, again, I see the problems almost on a daily basis.
In the long stretch. Now, the young lady, when she's expecting, she's in complete control of that.
Absolutely.
So she has the authority to mm-hmm. do as she chooses.
That's correct.
Now, if she marries the young man that she wants to put on the birth certificate, that does not change things, does it?
No, because nature is nature, and DNA is going to remain the same, and science cannot be refuted under those circumstances. So, you know, again, it's just that, you know, the other thing you run into, and this is true, I actually had this to happen one time, where a gentleman came to me and he wanted a DNA test done. This kid was 18 years of age then, and for whatever reason they did. He'd been this kid's father, believed he was a father, and the child believed he was his father. And essentially the judge in that case, I won't call his name, he was in an adjoining sister county, and he said, I'm not going to tell you, and I'm not going to tell them what the results were, because I'm not going to do that to that kid.
I agree with that.
And so even though the DNA said no, he was not going to divulge that, and everybody essentially went their way happy. But so that's the kind of problems you get into. But, yes, I mean, if she's essentially, there's not any way to control that aspect of it. There's you know, it's more problematic than not.
Well, when we come back from commercial, I want to flip something on you just a little bit so I can get a little bit more information about this. This is Danielle Carnes with Understanding the Law with local attorney Tommy Drake. We're going to get a commercial break. We'll be back in just a moment.
This is Ed Harrell, founder of The Kindness Revolution. I read a blog today and the title caught my attention. It said, if you spot it, you got it. The author went on to explain that often when we focus on the behavior of others, it's because we might tend to display that particular behavior ourselves. When we criticize others for their anger or their snap decisions or their impatience, it might just be because we display those tendencies ourselves. Sometimes we get so caught up in criticizing how others behave, we're blind to our own behavior. Maybe this is a good time to reflect on a couple of things. One would be to slow down before we judge others. The second, and maybe most important, would be to take a look at our own behavior and ask ourselves if we're pleased with it. That simple process just might make us better people and make our worlds a little kinder. To learn more, check us out at thekindnessrevolution.net.
Hey guys, let's face it. We all want to look our best, but with minimal effort, right? Well, that's where Angela at Scissor Salon comes in. She'll get you looking your best so you're always on top of your game. Walk-ins are always welcome. Scissors Salon, Highway 278 East, just past the water plant, 735-3089, 735-3089. Look for the big scissors on the roof.
Hey, Coleman, it's October. That means that it's time for Coleman's Oktoberfest. Come check it out. Monday, October the 1st through Saturday, October the 6th, and come check out our German heritage. Activities for the whole family are taking place right now in the middle of downtown Coleman at the Coleman Fest Hall Market Flats from Monday through Wednesday. Enjoy German music each morning by Wolfgang Wurz. Starting Tuesday at lunch, Freddy Day Catering will be serving up a German meal starting at about 10:30. And as the week progresses, enjoy music by Terry Cavanaugh and the Alpine Express. The Car Show, Arts and Crafts, Kids Area, 5K, 10K runs on Saturday, German food, music, dancing, the pickle eating contest, the Stein hoisting contest, and even on select days, your very own Live 95, we're going to be broadcasting on site, so come by and see us. To get more information on the events happening downtown, visit Facebook.com, the Coleman Oktoberfest page there, or ColemanOktoberfest.com for the complete schedule. Coleman Oktoberfest, a Coleman tradition.
When a disaster occurs, neighbors and community organizations want to reach out and help. But this isn't always easy. That's where your local Coleman County VOAD can help. VOAD stands for Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster. Your Coleman County VOAD serves to coordinate relief efforts throughout the county during times of crisis to ensure no area or family is left unassisted. But to do this, the Coleman County VOAD needs your help. Whether you're an individual, faith-based group, civic organization, or business, your Coleman County VOAD needs your help. To learn how you can be a part of the Coleman County VOAD, call the Coleman County EMA at 739-5410, 739-5410. Email ColemanCountyVOAD@gmail.com or search Coleman County VOAD on Facebook. Your Coleman County VOAD is Volunteer Organizations Active in Disaster.
Welcome back. Live 95 is Coleman's independent radio. You're listening to Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Coleman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Coleman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And now, once again, here's your host for Understanding the Law.
Welcome back. This is Danielle. I'm with Understanding the Law with our local attorney, Tommy Drake. Melvin's off tonight. So right before the commercial break, we were discussing paternity and a young lady's right to be able to put any name or if none on the birth certificate. So I want to flip this question over a little bit and kind of make it a little muddy.
Sure.
So the young man who's going to sign his name on the birth certificate, that is knowingly that he is not the biological father, but is taking responsibility for this child and, of course, will carry his last name.
Mm-hmm.
So, repercussions?
Well, I mean, obviously, and I want to look at it from a practical and a theoretical standpoint. First, in theory, he could, if he signs, it could be perjurious. It's a false statement, and so that's a problem. Has anyone, from a practical standpoint, ever been prosecuted? The answer is no, never in the history of the state of Alabama. So you know, repercussions and problems that can occur are first the natural mother and this what I call putative father have a falling out. They decide, well, we don't get along anymore, and I found a girlfriend. Well, he's on the birth certificate. And technically, if she went to the Department of Human Resources or sought the services of an attorney, filed a petition for child support and custody, he's in a dogfight. He can get ready. He signed his name. The lawyer's going to point it out. He signed his name on there. And so he's going to have to hire an attorney. Now, initially, here's the deal, and everybody needs to know this. Child support wrongfully paid can never be recovered. You say, well, what does that mean? Well, if you wrongfully pay somebody for 18 years child support and they know you're not the daddy, you can't get it back.
There you go.
Not even one penny. And the next thing is, as far as paternity, if you don't assert it in the first hearing, okay, you come to court, you got your lawyer, and you file for visitation, or what, you've got to raise the specter and issue of paternity right in a pleading in order for you to preserve it. And if you don't, you're forever time barred. So you've got to have that DNA test in that initial proceeding. What we have a lot of times is, I'll even give you an example. Young fellow came to me. He had been rushed into a proceeding. He didn't have the money to pay for a DNA test. And so he just said, to heck with it, I'll just agree and I will pay, I'll pay the child support. So he's been paying child support to the tune of over $20,000 now. And he's still paying. So he comes to me, and the issue is, how am I going to get out of this? I'm not the father. I didn't have the money to pay for a DNA or paternity test at the time. The judge says if you can't pay for it, you're presumed to be the father. This was one of those cases where his name's on the birth certificate. He said you're presumed to be the father, and that's that. So the guy's been paying. So what are his options at this point? Well, there's only one. The other side would have to agree to a paternity test. If they don't, he's stuck with the initial proceeding. That's the reason I say it's all that much more important to assert those things in the initial proceeding, because if you don't, you're forever time barred unless the other side agrees to allow you out.
So lay by and store your paternity DNA test money beforehand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that's the only way you would ever be able to, per se, escape it.
Yes.
Because you would be required by law, because you did sign the birth certificate.
I think there's a presumption, absolutely,
at
law.
There.
Sure, you're presumed to be the father at that point. And again, these documents are not to be taken lightly. These are official documents of the state of Alabama. Technically, they're notarized and under oath. So it's perjurious to say anything other than in state or sign anything that is not true or untrue. And even though, again, from a practical standpoint, nobody has been prosecuted, still, it causes enormous difficulties for both parties, and it causes enormous problems within the system. There's no telling how many cases or the percentage of cases that are before the juvenile court. We have two parties who are unmarried. Mm-hmm. They had a child out of wedlock, are before the court on the issue just as the same as we're discussing tonight. So the best thing, in my opinion, is to just do, follow the golden rule, essentially. And not only the golden rule, but just tell the truth. And then you can deal with these issues later. Example being that if the actual natural father does not take an interest in the child, there's remedies there to terminate his rights. You know, if he has no contact with the child, has no relationship with the child, doesn't pay child support for a period of 90 days, it used to be 6 months, but 90 days now, then this putative father, the father that is married to the natural mother, can file a petition for adoption. So in the long haul, you're saving money that way. So it's mm-hmm. better not to defraud the state of Alabama, because you're defrauding yourself. I mean, essentially, in the end product. And of course, there are relationships at work, and I'm not knocking that
either. I mean, I hope that this couple, they want to get married before the baby's born, and then she wants him to carry the baby, you know,
right.
She wants to give him his last name. And that's her prerogative.
Mm-hmm.
And let's make it clear, she cannot be locked up for that. That is her right.
Sure.
That is her
child. They're not going to lock. They're not going to lock anybody up for that. No. No, absolutely not.
We have that clarified, and I appreciate you answering that question. Sure. We have a call-in line, guys, if you would like to call in with any law question. Tommy is very well equipped to be able to do so. It's 256-737-9505.
So what do you think about the Kavanaugh deal in the Supreme Court? You got this big blow-up in I probably shouldn't have brought that up, should I?
You can. It's a big it's a big ordeal right now.
Well, let me tell you about my twist on it, because I'm as usual, I'm different than anybody else. I don't really look at it on Kavanaugh from a standpoint of the he said, she said. I'm really not interested in that. Okay. Kavanaugh, as most people know, was a member of the Bush administration and was a key component and primary drafter of the USA Patriot Act. Now, that's my beef with him, because as everybody knows, the USA Patriot Act and the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, essentially obliterated habeas corpus, at least from a federal standpoint, although the Supreme Court is backed up on that to some degree, but it's essentially eviscerated the Fourth Amendment. So you now have national security papers that authorize FBI agents to search and seize without the authorization of a court. I mean, when they say national security papers, what does that mean? Well, it means a search warrant. But they changed the terms, just like, you know, we talk about, well, I won't give that example. But the point being, it is a way to circumvent the Fourth Amendment. I don't like that aspect about him, so I would be a no vote on that. You know, the problem with the U.S. Supreme Court, you won't hear this much, and I don't think I've read it in the book, but I'm going to outline my issue with the U.S. Supreme Court. You have the three branches of government. You have the legislative, which is essentially selected by the people. Mm-hmm. You have the executive branch, which is also selected by the people. You have the judicial branch, and in Britain, the way the Brits pick their judges or their superior court judges, it's set on the chancery courts and the courts of exchequer and all the higher courts. They have the judiciary, the actual branch itself. They set up a committee and they decide who are the best attorneys or judges that, one, have the best education, the experience, the best disposition, who's going to faithfully follow the law, and also who's going to be fair and impartial, and who's going to interpret the law correctly.
Right.
We don't do that in the United States.
No,
and that's the problem we have with the U.S. Supreme Court. Now we've politicized the court, and this is where the founders went wrong. I mean, I agree with 99% what the founders did, but this is the problem in the American system now, and the reason that our constitutional republic is on the way out is because that we politicize the courts, specifically by saying that a politician, the president, no matter who it is, Republican, Democrat, has the ability to select who is going to be the nominee. And then we have other politicians, the Senate Judiciary Committee, who has to first, he has to go before to approve, and then, of course, the entire Senate makes the vote. Well, let's be honest. What I've seen, and I've done a lot of research on it, most of the people that are being presented as nominees are the people that gave the most in campaign donations, believe it or not. You can almost invariably go back and research it back in time, meaning that a lot of these people are political operatives. Same thing with, believe it or not, the United States U.S. attorneys. You go back and look at the U.S. attorneys and look at the amount of money that was contributed to whoever that president was, you're going to see that that person was the person selected, unfortunately. So what I would hope would happen at some point, we would be able to depoliticize the system. And when I say that, not only federally, but in the state systems, Alabama, of course, as you know, is one of only three states that allow partisan elections. Most states have a completely different nonpartisan system, and in other cases they have a merit system to where the judiciary or the governor appoints a judge for a given spot, especially the appellate courts, and then the people can vote to remove that person if they think that their judgments are wrong, their opinions are bad, they're not following the law, they're not following the Constitution. So, you know, again, it takes it out of the political realm, and that's I think that's a very important thing to get us back on the right path.
Well, and it just seems like the Constitution has become corrupt in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, no doubt about it.
And, you know, I'm going to put that out there, and I'm going to use that lightly because that could be taken many, many ways. But in my opinion,
it doesn't exist.
It does not exist.
No.
And the Constitution was built on the Word of God, or as well as it
well, sure.
should be.
Yeah, and of course, the natural law, you know. you know, the natural law is essentially that anything goes unless it hurts somebody else. And that, you know, if you look at the, you know, John Locke and the philosophers of the Enlightenment, that was essentially their position. You know, that's not anarchy. A lot of people think anarchy is chaos. Anarchy is not chaos. It just simply means you're not going to follow the rules of somebody else. But these guys believed in the natural law, and specifically that as long as it doesn't hurt somebody else, then you're entitled to the benefit of it. And I certainly believe that too. That's one of it's like the seatbelt law. You know, you're not hurting anyone but yourself if you're not wearing a seatbelt. You know, and it didn't. That's a problem with that, and that's the reason it's really not legal either. And the only reason we have it is everybody knows is because we needed the highway funds. The legislature wanted to, you know, fill the coffers in order to spend more money. So, that's not good. But no, I agree with you. It all emanates from the natural
view
of things. Yeah,
it really does.
Yeah.
So again, our call-in line is 256-737-9505. I also want to give out the Drake Law Firm information if you are looking for a representation. Tommy Drake can be reached at the Drake Law Firm at 256-739-9445. That's 256-739-9445. And you can call and make an appointment, and Tommy will slide you right on in the door and sit down with you.
Yeah.
So tell me what else you got going on.
Well, as usual, I'm stirring up problems by...
Here we go.
Yeah, issues dealing with the mandamuses and these extraordinary writs. And I'll give you an example of one that I have going on now. You know, we've talked somewhat about habeas corpus, you know, being the freedom writ, the writ of liberty, and it's very important to me, and I think most constitutionalists, you know, really patriotic Americans believe in the value of habeas corpus. I mean, and again, you know, we've talked about also that this came stepping up from as early as the 11th century and forward and still exists. It's really the bedrock of any constitutional republic. The Romans had it, the Brits had it, the French. But, you know, it's been under attack, especially in the Hamdi case. It came up, you know, post 9/11. That was a big case. But in Alabama, what we've seen over the years is also somewhat of the watering down of the writ of habeas corpus. But I want to give at least one instance where it can sort of make you feel good about things going on with the appellate court system here in Alabama. And it's a recent habeas corpus, a case that I had where I got a ruling that I felt pretty good about. And it dealt with a case where I represented this guy in Florence. He was charged with several crimes, and he had this excessive bond, $250,000 cash. And I filed a petition for writ of habeas corpus there in Colbert County, and the judges set on it. Now, the way the rules work in Alabama, since it's such an extraordinary writ, you're supposed to have a hearing within 5 days. So, you know, if you're sitting in jail, that's a good thing. You want to be able to know you're not going to sit there, you know. But so there's a 5-day rule, but if you don't obtain a hearing within 5 days, then you can oust that judge. And this is really a good rule of law, and it's been on the books since Alabama was even a territory in the old Alabama Digest, where you can ouster that judge. You can actually say, well, you know, I gave you 5 days to have a hearing, and my client's in jail, so I'm going to move this to Cullman County, or I'm moving it to Mobile. The law actually says you can move your case anywhere in the state of Alabama. So you got 67 counties you can pick and choose to get some justice. So this actually happened. And so I ousted this these judges there in the Colbert County Circuit and moved the case to sister circuit. But here's the interesting thing that came out that people might want to know. There's been a theme that continues to recur in a lot of my habeas corpus cases where judges will say, well, I'm not going to act on the writ of habeas corpus in the circuit court because you've got a district judge that has jurisdiction. Now, to explain that, when a person is arrested, the case initially goes to the district court, and then they're indicted, and it goes to circuit court. So the first court to have any relationship with a defendant is always the district court, unless there's just an indictment, which is rare. So, you know, you have a case, your client's arrested, he's in the district court, and you file a petition, writ of habeas corpus, and the judge says, as this judge said, well, I don't have jurisdiction because your case is in the district court, and therefore they have jurisdiction to handle this bail issue. Well, anyway, so I filed a writ of mandamus, and the Court of Appeal said, well, the judge is wrong. If you file a writ of habeas corpus, the circuit court has sole and exclusive jurisdiction to hear that, and the judge has to hear it. And he's got to have a hearing within 5 days. So that was good. And, of course, the reason I was able to get that case resolved so fast with the appellate court is because we'd had a similar issue with the J.C. J.C. Maynard case. The J.C. Maynard case, as you may recall, was a case where Mr. Maynard's daughter had been molested. And then he had shot the gentleman who had pled guilty to that. Yeah. And so that was an issue that came up in that case where the circuit judge said, well, you can't have it here and here. You got to have it in district court. And then the appellate court said, no, you've got to afford these people a hearing within 5 days. So that's a good thing. So that's been on the books, like I said, in Alabama since the, I would say at least the, probably around 1809, when Alabama was still a around the time it was still a territory, and it's been the law since. As a matter of fact, up till about 1923, if a judge didn't convene a hearing within 5 days, they were fined automatically $500. And you think about $500 back in 1923, what that would
have. That's a lot of money.
So it's a very important thing.
That's definitely a lot of money. Well, what particular courts have you been in? You were in court today, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, oh, Lord, it's hard to even keep up with it. I was actually, this is crazy because it all runs together. I was actually in Florence on another case this morning. And oddly enough, as I'm going to leaving the court, the stars align, you know.
My brother
was actually in another court, and he hadn't called me, so I saw my brother in Florence. That's strange.
You were in court with your brother today?
Yeah, yeah.
How cool was that?
He was in, I was in like courtroom A, he was in courtroom B, and, you know, so we're coming out and we meet, and I'm like, you know, this is strange. Ships passing in the night, you know, and what are you doing here in this court?
How interesting.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy. So, you know, normally, and it's really, it's, and I know Melvin, and it's not just Melvin, the attorneys that do a lot of work, as a matter of fact, I was looking the other day, I had a civil case, and I filed a continuance. The other attorney on the other side was an insurance lawyer. He worked for a big firm, you know, like Bosch and Bingham. Oh, we got a phone call coming in. So
I'll, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. But anyway, so he's like working for this big law firm, defense firm. And so I said, you know, I need a continuance on the case. And he said, well, I'm going to have to object. And I said, okay. So I went and I got on the computer, went to Alicorp, and I saw that I had 354 active cases. I'm talking about active cases in court. I looked at his and he had 10. And I'm thinking, he's going to object to me having a continuance. Well, I got 4 or 5 conflicts on the same day. Can you imagine? So I gave him a real rough time when I filed my, you know, motion to continue on that. Thankfully, the judge continued the case because of that. So
well,
it's all very interesting. But, you know, attorneys, you really have to have thick skin because you have to be prepared. I get up every morning at 4 o'clock, some mornings earlier. And it's not because I can't sleep. I'm actually fairly lazy. I got to sleep when my head hits a pillow. But you have to get up at 4 o'clock, and you have to work a lot of weekends. I remember a judge in Montgomery asking me, Mr. Drake, do you work on the weekend? But, you know, actually, my answer was yes. I mean, you've got to. Are you kidding me? I mean, I should have said, you got to be crazy. I mean, you're going to have to. You have to get up and dedicate the time, and that good quiet time in the morning for me is the best. And then if you have 2 or 3 cases that day, if you get everything straightened out to where you can handle all of them, at least you're prepared to go. And that's the key. I mean, I'll tell you, it's like Wayne Fuller. You know, everybody can say what they want, good or bad. The fact of the matter is he's very, very, very organized. I mean,
absolutely.
He's ready to go.
I agree with that.
I mean, he's got everything, the T's crossed and the I's dotted, and he's ready to go, and he's got the law, and he's... So you got to give the man credit. He's always been that way since the 30 years I've practiced law. So he should be commended. But that's the way you got to do it. And, you know, with laws changing so much, it's hard to keep up with it. And from my standpoint, it's not only keeping up with it, but it's fighting it. Mm-hmm. Because you're having to get the legal broomstick out and beat it down like a wildfire because there's so many different laws that are being adopted from other states being implemented. Then you have federal pressure on the state to adopt these laws, and then what laws somebody decides to pass in the state. It's insane, you know. But we need more attorneys, especially the young lawyers, to get off the stick, to get after these laws, to file petitions for declaratory judgment, and to have these bad laws declared unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. Because right now we're in a sea of bad law, and there's only a few, unfortunately, attorneys that are doing the kind of work that me and Melvin do. The main reason that some are unable to do so is because it's very expensive. You have to take the money out of your own pocket. You generally have a client that is indigent in a lot of these cases, especially mm-hmm. the case we were discussing in federal court. So it's tough, you know. You're having to expend a lot of time. And we're not, you know, trying to get. You're not going to get the kind of recognition you'd necessarily want because right. you're having to sue judges, and sue prosecutors, and sue county commissioners, and you're having to sue sheriffs. I mean, you're not, you know.
But doesn't it just boil down? And I know with Melvin, I've said this before. It's mm-hmm. it's ethics.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
ethics that this law is created to apply in a certain way that harms that person instead of helps that person.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely. You know, looking back at, I was trying to think, but on that, again, back to the federal case that we had, you know, again, you're having to sue state officials. And that's always tough because you've got to go back. We know or knew that when we filed these lawsuits that we were going to have to go back and practice with these people. We're going to have to go stand before these judges.
Yes.
And, you know, it's not saying that they weren't, you know, and again, you know, you can stand before one judge one day and it's this ruling, and you could go 3 counties over and it's a different ruling on the same facts, applying the same law. So, you know, people, I guess the best advice people should have when they go to hire an attorney, and also, you know, they need to understand who the judge is. because judges have a certain continuity about their rulings, in my opinion. You can, when you practice law as long as I have, you pretty much know what's going to happen in a domestic case. I'm sure Wayne Fuller could tell you the same thing almost to the letter, what's going to happen in almost in any given case. He's probably been practicing law 40 years. And
dedication. The amount of judges that you have,
too,
that varies, because like Coleman has five judges in, you know, that sit our benches in the courthouse. So when you go to like Winston County, you have two judges. That's all you have.
Absolutely.
So I do agree completely with that.
It's you've got to be able, good lawyers can read the judges, and good lawyers know when to shut up.
And good lawyers know when to tell their clients to shut up, too.
Right. And that's always a problem. I mean, I've got to where, I've told my wife this, I can read body language about a judge, whether it's state and federal, but more so with federal, because the federal judges, they can raise their eyebrow and you know it's time to shut up. And especially if you've been before federal appellate courts. I mean, I went before the 11th Circuit and I've been up there several times to argue cases, but you know when it's time to sit down. And of course, that's the older lawyers know when to. The younger lawyers they don't, but they'll learn over time. But again, it's important because those variables are all there when you have different judges in different markets, the larger markets versus the smaller markets, like you say, like Blount County, only one circuit judge. I mean, he's handling. When they have criminal jury weeks, they have a 78 to 85 page docket. This one judge, single judge. So they strike three juries. Are they going to get to any of those? I mean, they may get to one. So you've got to be able to read those judges. You've got to know pretty much what their philosophies are. And again, like I said, I really disagree with the system to where judges have to run and give a have a political party association,
right?
Because unfortunately, then you politicize rulings, and I think some judges feel confined that they have to act within certain parameters because of those political leanings, and that shouldn't enter into the equation when it comes to the law at all.
Politics should not be in the law.
Not.
I totally agree with that.
It should be cut right down the middle, let the chips fall where they may. And again, that's the way most states are. And of course, in federal court, that's the way it is because they're unelected.
Well, Tommy, thank you so much for being our special guest tonight. I know you'll come in here and rock it out with me again, and I appreciate you very much. This is Tommy Drake from the Drake Law Firm. He can be reached at 256-739-994. This is Danielle from One Stop for Coleman on Facebook, Faith, Family, and Business. Check us out. And Thursday night show, we will be here with Coleman Live on 95, the Dirt Road Lighters from Anniston, Alabama. Christopher Greer will be here with me, and Derek Sherrill. We will see you Thursday night at 6:30. This is Danielle signing out. Have a good evening.
Bye.